Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network as we deal with health issues today. We started out by talking about health literacy and turning our attention now to Alzheimer's disease and dealing with that. And what are things that you and I can do to sort of help best protect our loved ones and ourselves and the ability to work with Alzheimer's disease? It's pretty scary, I can tell you that. And I've talked to many people who, and my own family included, who have had experiences with Alzheimer's, and it's not a fun thing to deal with. And so I'm really pleased to have a couple of people who have spent a lot of time on this. Susan Blount was with the state of Wisconsin for 30 years, the last 10. Director of the Bureau of Assisted Living. She's now the clinical director of Elderspan Management. And Susan, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Enjoyed the opportunity of speaking with you.
Oh, thanks again. And Carrie Jargison is almost 20 years of experience caring for seniors, and she's the RN administrator of Meadows Assisted Living and Memory Care in Spring Green. That's an Elderspan residence. And glad to have you come as well, Carrie. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You may have questions or maybe experiences to share as we talk about Alzheimer's, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Elderspan has been really a leader in many ways in trying to increase and improve awareness. And I know there are people who aren't familiar with the organization itself, so maybe we could just start out by talking about Elderspan. And Susan, do you want to take that?
Sure. Elderspan is a management company. By that, we provide care and treatment for probably nearly 300 residents in 7 different locations in our Elderspan facilities. Several of those locations have very specific memory care units, and that's kind of bringing us back around to dealing with dementia in its many forms. Recently, Elderspan provided, along with the University of Wisconsin School of Nursing, we provided a 2-day educational seminar for our staff and other invited guests, focusing on Alzheimer's using an international expert by the name of Tipa Snow.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we wanted to do today was kind of capitalize on the things that she brought to our attention and try to educate the public a bit more about a disease that's devastating and here to stay.
Yeah. You know, you hear dementia and you hear Alzheimer's, and people tend to associate, well, is dementia Alzheimer's or Alzheimer's dementia? So there's some confusion, I think, on that. And maybe, Carrie, you can talk about that.
Yes, I can. Actually, dementia is kind of a overall term. It's an umbrella term, and 68% of dementia is Alzheimer's.
Okay.
And then there's other forms of that as well. There's a dementia called Lewy body. There's mm-hmm. frontal lobe. There's one that is called vascular, and that kind of affects the whole entire brain. And then there's some other smaller types, but Alzheimer's is the largest.
Yeah, by far. So would you say 60-some percent?
68% of that is Alzheimer's.
Well, it's a terrible disease, I can tell you. And, having had firsthand experience, and I'll bet you there are a lot of people listening today is, okay, my aunt or my grandma or my grandpa or whatever, or my mother or my husband or my wife, it happens a lot. When does it usually begin? Is it, Susan, does it start? It's not something that's going to affect typically somebody who's 20 years old.
There are examples of early age dementia, but generally speaking, the disease is manifested a little later in life, although our facilities have had 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds, typically by 65, you're going to see if you're some sort of symptomology that might lead you into that realm. And then for every 5 years after that, it increases your chances of coming through with dementia-like symptoms. I think the statistics are talking about the prevalence being at least one in five of us will have family members or some known person to us, plus at least one in three of us are going to die from Alzheimer's. So it's a shocking thing to say, but it's imperative that we put this information out there and work diligently towards teaching get early diagnosis so we can help.
Why is it so important that early diagnosis?
It's
not a curable disease yet.
It is not a curable disease. There are some medications that we've been working with for a number of years, but they're not meds that are in any way curing anything. Typically, what they do might be help us to contain or to modify some of the symptomology, but it doesn't change the fact that the disease is on a progression path.
Yeah.
It starts, it continues to the end.
Yeah.
If I could just say, too, that, you know, it's one of the reasons that it's important to get early detection is not just to early to detect the fact that you have the start of dementia, but it's more or less to get a baseline for yourself and your family, because with any, like any other disease, some of the preventing factors is, you know, getting good eating right, getting good sleep, exercising, decreasing stress, and then managing your other health issues if you have those, such as diabetes and your blood pressure and things like that. There's the researchers are finding that all of that can at least be a start in some preventing of the disease.
Okay, at least or slowing down the progression.
Slowing down the progression.
Yeah, that which is huge actually. Bill in La Crosse has a question for us, so let's go there. Bill, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. My question is, how is Alzheimer's diagnosed? And number two, when should somebody try to make a diagnosis for that person?
Mm-hmm. Good questions. And who wants to, you want to go ahead with that, Susan? Start, at least start.
I'll certainly give it a try. I think the first thing that's a bit confusing is that there isn't really an absolute diagnostic one-line answer. There's many things that might be contributing to what you see as changes in the individual. This is literally brain changing, and the effects are what are significant to diagnosing. There are specialist clinics, I think there's over 30 of them across the state of Wisconsin, that can help you with that diagnosis. And I have read that recently some folks are saying that lumbar spinal fluid has a way of kind of setting the picture in line for this is a possible way of diagnosing. Literally, for years, we've been told that the only true diagnosis is done on autopsy, which is doing no one any favors.
Right.
So we have to really go more by how the disease presents. And then there are experts who can help fill that out into a diagnosis.
Yeah, and Carrie, you're going to add something to that,
too. Yeah, what I was going to say is some of the tests that the doctors may run, they do like to get MRI of the brain. They have been able to see at least some changes in the size of the brain, even while the person is still alive. It doesn't necessarily diagnose Alzheimer's, but it will give them the or show them the fact that the brain is shrinking. When somebody is suffering from a form of dementia, the brain does shrink in size. It also will start to shrink internally leaving basically small holes, and that's where you're going to see the cognition changes.
And it's why we really strongly advocate that early diagnosis, so that we can begin to make plans so families can understand where we're going with this. And planning is just all critical to how the disease will be treated and what the entire development of this person's lifespan will look like.
Talking today with Susan Blount and Carrie Jorgensen from Elderspan. Both of them work with Elderspan in a couple of different capacities about dealing with Alzheimer's. Certainly an organization like Elderspan dealing with probably maybe 300 or so people who are living in Elderspan. Many of them probably at one point or another are going to have Alzheimer's, and which is too bad. So that's why they've kind of taken a leadership role on this, and how we can at least live with it, how we can treat it better. And I'm really glad to have them along today, and certainly hope that you'll join in as well with your questions and comments. Number 1-800-642-1234. Had a Facebook comment from Barb. Many of the children of a parent with Alzheimer's have been participating in studies for years, contributing their time, their blood, and their bodies in the hope that a cure will be developed. And I'm sure, Carrie, you're familiar with that work.
Yes, and that's some of the tests that the doctors in memory clinics and things are doing as well, even on the individual. The more information that they can have early on, the better that they can monitor and have that information even for the family for future once their loved one has passed on.
We have, I'm wondering about, the ability of people to kind of take care of themselves. And I think from my own experience, unfortunately, I have a sister who was kind of like a saint who left her job and came and lived with my mother for the last 5-6 years of her life. And so she really made a huge difference for my mother. But I would probably venture to say 99.9% of the families don't, or maybe it's not that high, but probably don't have that sort of ability to be able to have somebody to do that.
I think that's what's so terribly devastating and significant about this disease, that it's it isn't only the affected person. It's the entire family that get involved here.
And we're going to talk about that some more, and certainly talk about things that you and I can do relating to Alzheimer's right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Well, whether it's a friend or a family member, Alzheimer's affects probably somebody you know, or at least are within a family, and learning to deal with it and what resources are available, I think, very important. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our guests today are talking about how to care for your loved ones who have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Carrie Jorgensen, almost 20 years of experience caring for seniors. She's the RN administrator of Meadows Assisted Living and Memory Care in Spring Green. That's an Elderspan residence. And Carrie, thanks again for being with us
today.
Yes,
thank you for having me on.
And Susan Blount is been with the state for 30 years, the last 10 director of the Bureau of Assisted Living. Now she's the clinical director of Elderspan Management. And Susan, glad to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Larry.
And again, for those just tuning in, tell us again about Elderspan.
Elderspan is a management company, and we are very intimately involved in taking care of about 300 folks in 7 different locations across Wisconsin, mostly in the south and west, and in several of our facilities, I believe 5 of the 7 have memory care specific units, so that we have learned to become quite proficient in trying to help folks, not only with early diagnosis, but with how to deal with their loved one who is changed.
And you've we have a couple of references on our Facebook page. We've got a link. I'm pretty sure we have a link to Elderspan on our Facebook page. If we, yeah, I'm sure there is. If you put elderspan.org, isn't it?
I think it is.
Yes. I think it's elderspan.org. But anyway, go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You'll get a link there. We were talking before the news a little bit about care, and I'm, you know, Karen and Cindy, we're going to get to you in just a minute, but care, as I think Susan started to talk about, is extremely, can be extremely stressful and difficult for family members. And I know, Carrie, you wanted to add to that.
Yeah. When people have to be realistic when their loved one or family member has dementia. And I know everybody's goal is to try to maintain that person in their home as long as possible. But it can be very difficult when you're dealing with aging spouse. You have two, you have a mom and a dad, and mom is trying to care for dad who has dementia, and you know them themselves have medical issues themselves, and they're trying to care for this person, and it can become very stressful. And generally, the person who does not have dementia may end up in the hospital or more ill or even passing away before the person with dementia. So it's very important as a family to talk about those things, making sure that they're getting a plan in place and maybe looking at residential care facilities, because as a person's disease progresses, they change in the sense of, you know, even eating a meal becomes more difficult. There might be challenges with medications, getting them to take it. They don't understand what it's for. And hygiene in general becomes very difficult. They feel that they've already taken a shower, they've got new clothes on, and the fact is they're wearing the same outfit for 3 days. And and other challenges such as, you know, wandering away, you know, thinking they're going to go down to the store, but they can't remember what they get there, where they're at, how to get back home. Those are some other challenges of having them still in the home.
Well, and we can get back to that and talk some more about it. But Cindy in Duluth, Minnesota, has something to a comment that I wanted to bring her in. Cindy, thanks for calling.
Yes, you're welcome. I'm calling about a situation. There were seven children in our family, and we were very careful when our father died, who had been the caregiver, to find the best place we could for our mother. And I live in Duluth, but my siblings in Wisconsin, they checked out multiple memory care centers, and they tried to pick the best one that they could find, and it was really a tragic ending to our mother's life. And she was doing quite well, and then rather than kind of redirecting her behavior, they just continued to call and add more drugs to her regimen. And at one point, the fatal error was made, and nobody discovered it, because we found out later there wasn't one person that was working or supervising that memory care center that had a medical degree, not an RN, not an LPN, and she was given a toxic mix of risperidol and haloperidol together.
Oh, boy.
That's terrible.
It destroyed her brain. It was the saddest thing anybody could watch happen to their parent. And we had to, she couldn't sit anymore, she didn't know what food was, she was in a constant state of motion for day after day. We had to do the right thing, and we had to withhold food and water, because she was suffering like no human being should ever have to suffer.
Well, that's a terrible situation, Cindy, I know it was probably difficult for you to even talk about. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. And I know that both of our guests today have comments. Susan, maybe start with you.
Cindy, first of all, let me say I'm terribly sorry for your experience and for your loss. The very sad news is that the regulations for community-based residential care facilities do not, in the state of Wisconsin, require that there be licensed nurses present. That's one of the things that is extremely important to Elderspan, and it is a very solid core in all of our facilities that we do provide licensed staff on a 24/7 basis. In addition to that licensed staff, we also have consultation services with a geriatric psychiatrist, so that we have plenty of resource and support for the management of medications. I would like to say this was available everywhere. Unfortunately, at this time, it's not. It's something that I think we'd like to aspire to. We're working hard to make those things happen, but we're just not there yet. And it's part of why we do want to get the word out and hear the kind of stories, even the horror stories that you're telling us, so that we can correct our ways and do better in the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Carrie, you wanted to add to that?
Well, I would add that...
And you're a registered nurse, by the way.
Correct, and I manage one of the Elderspan buildings.
And Susan is, too.
Yeah, correct, she is, too. But one of the things that we at Elderspan, I feel, do a tremendously good job at is training the staff. Training the staff in dementia and reapproaching, and as much information as we can get from the families about their loved one really helps guide the staff in how to care for them, how to build routine. And when you do all of that, there is less medication. You really don't need the mm-hmm. medication. You're not going to have the behaviors, the agitation, those kind of things. You really have to get in the mindset of getting in their world, in the patient's world. And when you train your staff, you will not have as many behaviors and issues that would result in a nurse calling for medication.
Another thing that we have found very successful, and again, it isn't solely our idea, this is information that's out there, but we tend to use music as a strong intervention. There's a considerable amount of research that talks about the memories in music, that those folks who in the age span of 18 to 25, whatever mm-hmm. music you were listening to during that time becomes something that you will appreciate again.
Fondly.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that in itself has been very successful when we begin to see the agitation, particularly in the afternoon, later afternoon. Some folks experience something called sundowning, where behaviors become much more prevalent for the individual for whatever reason. We try to help distract and redirect, and mm-hmm. by using music, that is one modality. There are other things that we can do, but that has been very useful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Rather than a pill.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. Pill,
yes, exactly. Yes.
We had, and Cindy, thanks again for calling. I really appreciate it. I'm really sorry for the experience, and believe me, Susan and Carrie's the looks on their faces. I'm also very sorry for the experience that you and your family has had, but I appreciate you sharing with us. Thanks again. We have, you can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. That's our Facebook page title. An email from Carol: I'm a 73-year-old woman with no sign of Alzheimer's. However, both of my brothers, who are my only siblings, died of Alzheimer's at the ages of 77 and 83. Are there any new statistics or information regarding the genetic connection to the disease? And that's really a bit up in the air, is it not?
At this point, I believe it's still up in the air. I know researchers are definitely looking into that, but there's been no definite answer that there is a complete genetic study out there that shows, or connection. But what I would recommend to her is to routinely go see her doctor and continue to have the physicals and the blood work and to keep on that and so that, you know, she can have early diagnosis if it becomes an issue.
If it comes as an issue. I guess if both your brothers had it. There's the interesting Facebook question or comment from Michael that sort of relates to this. Michael says, Alzheimer's was not a common disease when I was a kid. What has changed? And is that really the case? Or what do you think?
I really don't think I'm an expert in that particular question, but I do think that it probably was in existence, but our society was so different back then. Grandma and grandpa stayed at home. The kids and the grandchildren were generationally on the same farm, and people just got used to taking care of one another. Mm-hmm. I think we probably ate better or more reasonably back then. We probably exercised more appropriately and were less stressed than the kind of society that we live in now. So was it in existence? Possibly, just not recognized as the disaster it is today.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm probably living longer than we were 50 years ago, too.
Correct.
And the longer you live, the more likely, I would assume, the more likely the chances are of having it. We had another question from another caller. What causes the death for an Alzheimer's patient? Carrie, you want to talk about that?
Yes. It's actually, they tend to not actually die from dementia. Mm-hmm. It's the disease, the brain failure from the dementia ends up causing other problems, such as them not recognizing food, not being able to eat or understand what to do. Generally, somebody's loved one will die of, frankly, malnutrition.
Yeah.
Could be dehydration and a combination of pneumonia tends to be really what takes their loved one. And it's not anybody's fault. It's just truly that the body, the brain is shutting things down, and they can no longer...
They just can't function anymore.
Correct.
Julie in Sauk City, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to share something that I have done for my mother-in-law. She just recently turned 96, and she's been in a nursing facility for a couple of years. And with the dementia that she's experiencing, it seems that whenever we visit, she would keep asking the same questions over and over. So for her 96th birthday, I made her a book. And on the front, it has, I am Margaret, and her last name, and I am 96 years old. And then inside the book, I printed, I did a little story of her life, where she was born, who her parents were, who her siblings are, about her life and what she did and her children, and put photos in there. And she's found it so fascinating. I see her going back to it over and over and reading it, and then she looks at us like, is that really true? Did it in large print on real bright paper. And I also felt it was good for the caregivers in the facility to read, because then they knew about her and her life and had things to talk with her about and keep her mind working.
Julie, you're wonderful.
Yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. That's exactly what she needs, and the facility. You're correct. The caregiver needs that. That's a great idea.
One of the things that we stress strongly is a development of something we call a life review or a social history. It starts on admission, and then we continue to collect. But exactly the sorts of things that you're talking about, what should the caregiver know to be able to have a conversation with the resident at 2 o'clock when she wakes up and is not sleepy anymore? Now what do we do? So it's very helpful.
Well, yes, and I did it on the computer, and I put it into a loose leaf form book so that I can update it when her age changes or when something changes within her family, that I can just add a page or update things. So anyway, I just wanted to share that.
What a daughter-in-law. Wow.
Thanks, Julie.
Yes, that's fantastic.
Thank you so much for calling. What a wonderful idea. Linda in Middleton has a question, I think. Linda, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've noticed in restaurants in Middleton and Madison, they have stickers that say dementia friendly. And I was having a conversation with my kids about that. Can you tell us what that means?
I can tell you a little bit about that. This is something new for Wisconsin. They're hoping that it'll take off. It's starting out kind of small. But basically what that means is these specific type of, whether it's restaurants or wherever you're going to see that little sticker, is taking on training their staff to have a better understanding of dementia. And they're also changing how their menus may look. They may have like a more simple menu for that person with dementia. And so this is a kind of a new thing that's coming aboard, but that's what it means, is that they're taking on training their staff, their workers on dementia, how to maybe recognize the signs that somebody may have it. And then some of the restaurants are actually having a menu for them, or a menu page that keeps it more simple so they don't have to make such challenging decisions when they come into a restaurant.
Very excellent.
It's really the result of several years of work on the part of the state of Wisconsin. The Department of Health Services has done a massive redesign of dementia, and this is one part of what they've put forth. Their goal is to find facilities that are willing to participate in dementia friendliness. And this is, as Carrie has described, it's the beginning of what we hope will continue in other communities as well.
Thank you so much for that call and that comment. I appreciate your comments, Linda. Thank you so much. We have, and boy, here we are, a little bit shorter for time, but Amanda and Madison, hi.
Hi, I have a question about trying to get a family member into a memory care facility, or not necessarily a facility, but actually being evaluated. When my family has called, we've found that the wait sometimes is 3, 4, or 5 months, and we're just concerned about what we'll lose in those 3, 4 months before we can even have our family member evaluated.
Oh, yeah, it's a long, long time. And you folks aren't in the evaluation business, I don't think, Carrie, are you, or Susan?
Well, as a facility manager, we actually do evaluate or do an assessment prior to somebody coming to our facility. One, to get to know them, to see what their needs are, but two, to make sure that we could manage their needs. So we do go out and assess, or the person can come to our facility and we assess. Now, when it comes to facilities having wait lists, there's not really a whole lot that I can say or change on that. Unfortunately, it's because of the growing need for the care.
Yeah. Which is too bad. And now, Elder Span, you take on, in your residential care facility, this is a facility for not only, obviously, people with Alzheimer's, but sort of the broad range of...
Correct. It's for assisted living and memory care. So there's a combination of care.
And typically, we'll ask, in your case, people would go to your website probably if they wanted interested in learning more. And where would you go from there then?
I think whether it's our facilities or any
anybody.
Placement facility, I strongly encourage the family to go see.
Yeah.
You need to be feet on the ground. You need to see what it looks like, what it smells like. Importantly, what are the people engaged in doing so that there's something happening that has some purpose and meaningfulness for the individual residents. If you're even considering the facility, I would ask to share a meal. Perhaps bring your person to not only the meal, but to attend an activity or two in the afternoon. So get involved.
Get involved. And with that, we have to close. I hope you guys will come back and be with us again. It was interesting for me, and I'm sure for our listeners as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Susan Blount and Carrie Jorgensen from the Elder Span. Susan's the clinical director, Carrie, an RN administrator at their facility in Spring Green. Thank you for listening. Stay with us.